يقولون سلام سلام ولا هنا سلام.
You're listening to Middle East Analysis, a podcast series from the Catholic Bishops' Conference of England and Wales. You're listening to Middle East Analysis on catholicnews.org.uk, and that can only mean one thing. That means we welcome into the studio Dr. Harry Hagopian, our regular studio guest, and the Bishop's advisor on the Middle East North Africa region, the MENA region. Now, Harry is a lawyer, an international lawyer, a former Assistant General Secretary of the Middle East Council of Churches, an advisor, a political commentator, an ecumenical advisor, and many, many other things as well. Harry, thanks for coming in.
My pleasure, James. You forgot in that very positive introduction to say that he's also got a Twitter account these days.
Ah, isn't that the truth? At Harry Hagopian, all of you Twitterers out there, check out Harry's tweets. I'm sure he'll do something off the back of this particular podcast. There you go. I've committed you to that, Harry. Now, let's start with Syria, obviously. Mm-hmm. Now, since we've last spoken, we've had the horrific massacre in Houla. Mm-hmm. And we've also had some 13 bodies in the east of the country summarily executed. Yeah. And the first question really off the back of that is that also the death of Kofi Annan's six-point plan?
Well, to be honest with you, James, it will have been the death of the Kofi Annan six-point plan. That six-point plan will have died even earlier than the massacres in El Houla and in Deir ez-Zor, were it not for the fact that one sad truth is absolutely correct, and that is it is the only document available. It is the only option that is on the table at the moment. So if you were to say that the Kofi Annan plan is dead, then it would assume that there is a plan B. Just like in our country, if plan A for the economic growth doesn't work, is there a plan B? No, there is no plan B, so we stick with plan A come what may. The same thing applies, unfortunately, to the situation in Syria, where at the moment, for a whole variety of reasons, not least because many powers in the West do not want any sort of intervention in Syria because of the Russian and Iranian position on Syria, it seems that Kofi Annan's plan is the only one that's available. So everybody is trying to give it artificial respiration in order to keep it alive, although we all know from the facts on the ground that it's pretty much on its deathbed.
Obviously, we have the Russian position, as you've just mentioned. And with the Houla massacre, obviously, the Russian position was to say, well, hang on, it's not all the regime. And, you know, terrorists in inverted commas amongst the rebels. What is the truth? Do we know what the truth is?
Well, it is never easy in the fog of war to be able to say exactly who is killing whom. But I've heard many people who I've spoken with, I've heard BBC correspondents, I have heard UN monitors, including the head of the monitoring mission in Syria, who have spoken about their own observations when they went and visited this village. Incidentally, James, this village is a little village in the province of Homs in the western part of Syria. And it is largely Sunni, surrounded by Alawite villages. And every single person I've spoken to or I've heard refer to this massacre has suggested that basically what happened and what happens in situations like this elsewhere that somehow do not get reported is that the Syrian army comes and bombs a village, a center, a neighborhood, and then those shabiha or the thugs of the regime go in and they then perform their massacres. That is one trend, how these things happen, and it is almost vengefulness, vindictiveness, an attempt to frighten the population and cow them into submission. Clearly, all this is not working, but in the process, many, many people are indeed dying. And it's mind-boggling. There are about 13,000-14,000, our own Foreign Secretary William Hague used the term 15,000 dead. I mean, that is twice the number of Muslims who died in Bosnia before the West interfered. I mean, 8,000 Muslims died in Bosnia before the West decided that it had to intervene militarily to save the day. And yet all this is happening, and we're still talking about the Kofi Annan plan. Well, interesting enough, let me just share with our listeners two little points about this Kofi Annan plan. Just imagine that there are roughly 300 monitors covering a country that is over 70,000 square miles. What can 300 monitors do in order to check, verify what is happening, how these events are taking place? The other thing that is happening, the Secretary General of the UN formerly, Kofi Annan, who now carries the hat of the Arab League and the UN in this initiative, constantly calls on both sides to hold a ceasefire. Now, I have an issue with that in a very practical term, not in an existential term of how do you actually call for a ceasefire when there is so much bitterness and there is so much blood between the two sides. But more to the point, my understanding of a ceasefire under international law is that it includes two armies who are fighting, and then you ask for a ceasefire, in other words, for the firing to cease. Well, yes, we have one army, and a very powerful one at that, the regular Syrian army. But opposite it, we have a ragtag of Free Syrian Army people who are trying with their Kalashnikovs and their guns to counter the might of a whole authoritarian regime. How can you ask both sides to stop at the same time as if you are asking two states to stop warring? The plan itself, I think, is a desperate attempt to gain time to see if there is anything else that could be done to help the situation, because there are many, many issues. I mean, there is a plan now to see whether it would be possible to come up with a Yemeni model for Syria, to have the president leave the way it happened previously in Yemen. But there are also other issues that are quite worrying. For instance, what if this conflict spreads out of Syria? What about Jordan? What about Turkey? What about Lebanon? What about Iran? What about Israel? These are issues that are quite frightening. What about all the refugees in Lebanon and Turkey? What about the fact that somewhere near Aleppo there are large numbers of chemical weapons? Now, if you have all-out chaos, who's going to control those chemical weapons? And if they fall in the wrong hands, what will happen to those chemical weapons? What about the fact that Kofi Annan's mandate comes to an end in July, at the very same time that the Muslim world starts its one-month fast of Ramadan? All these things are things that need to be discussed, that need to be dealt with. And I believe that at the moment, the United States is being extremely submissive in its attitude to the whole situation, and that we are not yet realizing the full potential of the danger that is lurking in the country.
Now, it fills me full of dread, to be quite honest with you, to even put this into words. But if we're saying that the Kofi Annan 6-point plan is at the very least well on its knees, is a military solution, although people don't want to stomach it and they're pretty fatigued from it, is a military solution the only solution?
I don't think a military solution is the only solution, James. I still am one of those many people, Syrians and non-Syrians alike, who still thinks that a military intervention at this stage, given what Syria is, a powder keg in the heartland of the Arab world, I do not necessarily think that the time is yet ripe. But before we go for an all-out Syrian intervention, I just talked about the 8,000 Bosnian Muslims who were killed and the 1 year it took for the West to intervene. Well, listen, in Libya, it took the West only 31 days to intervene. So look, compare this. Now we have 13 months of violence and bloodletting in Syria. Maybe it will come to that, maybe it won't. I pray to God that things will settle down before we go down that road. But before that happens, there are other issues that need to be done. Finally, for instance, the West has implemented the very psychological measure of asking all the Syrian ambassadors in many of the Western countries countries to leave. This should have been done well a year ago, not now. The fact that there are many more sanctions that could be exercised on the regime which haven't yet been implemented. The fact that now the Syrian regime is saying that they're going to send an Olympic team from Syria led by a Syrian general. Now, there are things that we can do. We can even start thinking in terms of how do we open corridors of humanitarian aid in the country before we start thinking of sending the artillery and the foot soldiers in there. But having said that, what cannot happen is to continue the way it is at the moment. And unfortunately, while Al-Hawla is a defining moment, and United Nations Secretary General Kofi Annan formally said that it is a tipping point when he met President Bashar al-Assad yesterday. However, no matter how much of a tipping point or a defining moment, it is not the last one. I think we are going to witness more dreadful massacres before we eventually find a way out of this dangerous morass.
Good analysis, Harry. That's the end of part one. In part two of this Middle East analysis, we're going to shift the focus down and round a bit to Egypt, where we've had the first round of presidential elections.
Absolutely.
So stay with us on catholicnews.org.uk, and we'll be back very shortly.